Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The San Antonio human smuggling tragedy that left 10 dead is a stark reminder that the business of selling people is prevalent. Our first guest today is Holly Strand. She's a computer forensics analyst for the Pennington County Sheriff's Office. She chairs the Western South Dakota Human Trafficking Task Force. It's a team of law enforcement officials that investigates and shuts down in-person and online traffickers. The task force is one of five chosen to attend a national conference on human trafficking this year. SDPB's Leah Cover learns more about the conference and the state of human trafficking in South Dakota.
The Western South Dakota Human Trafficking Task Force begin and why?
Well, goodness, I am not sure the exact year. I want to say it was 2 or 3 years ago. I've been with it since the beginning, but I just started chairing this year. And it was developed because I think everybody wanted to start with the assumption that here in South Dakota, we don't have human trafficking. But after a couple cases in Sioux Falls and realizing that through the Sturgis bike rally and hunting season that people were seeing more and more signs of human trafficking in our state, that we really needed to reach out to possible victims and allow people the resources they needed to identify and respond appropriately.
Okay, and how far does your task force reach geographically?
We cover Western South Dakota, and then the Eastern Task Force covers Eastern South Dakota. We do a lot of overlap, though. We reach out to each other, and then we've got some folks in Pierre that do some stuff in the central region, and I think maybe possibly someday a central South Dakota task force. But we do everything we can to utilize resources across the state.
And what are some of the patterns that you're finding in human trafficking on the western side of the state or just in the state overall?
Well, this year it'll be 20 years that I've worked in this field. I would love to say human trafficking is incredibly different, but in so many ways it's so similar to the rest of victimization, whether it's physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, neglect, witness to violence, domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, elder abuse. I mean, I could go on and on, but they all come down to one thing, and that's the exploitation of vulnerability. And so when we look and we say, if you have a teen that's running away or a kid that's being abused in the home, a person that's addicted to drugs or alcohol, a young mom that is overwhelmed with trying to take care of her kid and finances, in each one of those situations creates a vulnerability that can be exploited by somebody looking for money, looking for a car, looking for sex, whatever it is. And that's where human trafficking comes into play.
And these could be people that they know very well. It's not necessarily a stranger.
Well, it could be somebody that they know. In some cases, it's family members that will offer them. In some cases, it is people that owe debts for drugs that offer girls to pay off their debts. In some cases, it may start off as a romantic relationship, which turns into domestic violence, which turns into somebody offering the other person to sell for sex.
What are some signs that are common among victims of human trafficking that people could recognize and maybe, you know, inquire further within about?
In a lot of cases, you're just, the biggest sign is a vulnerable person. So if it is a teenager who's run away, if it is somebody addicted to drugs, if it's somebody that you look at and you think, you know, they won't look me in the eye, they're not addressed appropriately for the weather, they seem to be fearful of the people that they're with. Those kind of things, that just that gut check of this doesn't seem right.
You all were in an event this past Saturday in Rapid, I believe.
Yeah.
It was an educational sort of event at the Creamery. And can you tell me a little bit more about that event was about and what your role was in that event?
The event was about bringing the spotlight to human trafficking in the state of South Dakota and Western South Dakota. It was really to get people to open their eyes and to look around. One, to look for the vulnerable that may be already being exploited, but also to look with the eyes that if we can prevent this, if we can take care of a vulnerability before somebody else exploits it, that as community members, we need to do it. my role in the event was to talk about how the internet plays a role in human trafficking. And we talked about how, you know, if you were to look in the past, think about trying to sell a 14-year-old girl, you couldn't just walk her downtown and hope that some guy that sees her downtown is going to know that she's for sale. Also, if they knew that if this guy's a pimp and he was trying to sell her, that you'd probably get more people that would step out and try to rescue her. But nowadays, they use ads online in which people that don't have to go downtown in a big city, or they don't have to look necessarily around town for somebody selling sex, they can go online and they can look for opportunities to have sex with minors, adults, or others that are being sold.
That's a much more common thing these days. It could be young boys, young girls. It's just anyone that's vulnerable.
I would love to say that it's just girls, but it's not. It's boys and girls. And there used to be, when I was a teenager, there used to be a built-in barrier that parents had in place. The example I like to use is when I went to South Middle School, some guy from California couldn't call the South Middle School and say, I'd like to talk to Holly Strand. I'm just a guy from California looking to get some nudes from her. I mean, they would have laughed. They would have hung up, probably called the police. And they sure the heck wouldn't have allowed him to say, well, you can't talk to her, but if you'd like to give me a message 50 times today about the things you'd like to do to her, we'll pass those on. He would have had to call my house. My mom or dad would have answered the phone, and they would have decided whether he got to talk to me or not. There was a built-in barrier that used to exist that allowed parents to filter who got to contact their kids. So whether it was soliciting images, pictures, or trafficking, there was a barrier in place. Nowadays, that barrier is gone. I think parents would be horrified at the amount of contact that outside people have with their kids throughout the day. And so, you know, we talk about the vulnerabilities. When a kid is vulnerable to solicitation online, they're also vulnerable to solicitation in person.
I know that it's hard to regulate the internet and what kids are exposed to without, you know, feeling like you're infringing on privacy, but is educating kids at a young age about, you know, who they should trust, is that the best way to prevent this from happening in kids that could potentially fall for this?
Definitely. The ICAC, the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, mm-hmm. we do a lot of work getting into the schools, talking to kids, talking to teens, young adults, their parents, educators, law enforcement, you name it. If we can talk to them, we will. Because it's not just about the parents knowing how to keep their kids safe. Kids have also got to understand what their vulnerabilities are. They have to understand that their parents are not the enemy and that there's people online that are looking to exploit them. And if they don't understand what their vulnerabilities are and how to thwart advances and how to report, they can find themselves in over their heads pretty quickly.
The Sturgis motorcycle rally could be a big opportunity for someone to take advantage of someone. Do you have any advice for anyone who's participating in those events, something to be wary of that's particular to that event?
Absolutely. Anytime you have drugs and alcohol, that creates a vulnerability in a person. In a lot of cases, you take the Sturgis bike rally. Sturgis is a very small town. And then all of a sudden, one time a year, it's huge. And so a lot of the people are from outside South Dakota. They're not familiar with the area. And so whether it is teens that have run away or young teens and young adults that are brought in to dance, wash cars, anything, there's a vulnerability about being in a place that they're not familiar with. Even if you took a Rapid City teen and dropped them downtown Chicago and said, run for help, they wouldn't know which way got worse and which way got, you know, better. And mm-hmm. so with Sturgis Bike Rally, when you're looking at the vulnerabilities, drugs and alcohol, being in a place that they're not familiar with, and also just being a youth in that kind of environment makes them incredibly vulnerable.
Are there any things that aren't being done enough for victims nationally or even in the state itself?
I think that it's hard because trafficking in Sioux Falls will look different than Rapid City, which will look different in Denver than it does in Chicago, that it looks different in Las Vegas. And so every single area has got to determine what it looks like, what the needs are, and how to respond. I was talking to a gal from Sioux Falls that runs the task force in Sioux Falls, and she had talked about, you know, every time they get a new case, there's something different. There's something different that you think, oh, we're not prepared for that yet. And so it's no different with our task force of every time something comes up, you kind of wonder, okay, is that something we need to do better at, or is there something that we could have done to prevent it?
You've got the conference coming up for the task force. What do you expect from the conference? What have they told you you're going to be talking about, working on?
So it's a 3.5-day training, and they're very specific in who can attend. So for the task force, we got two local law enforcement, two state and local prosecution, FBI, Homeland Security, victim specialist, and the task force coordinator. So for each team that was picked, that was the outline in which they were given to send people. And so in some cases, everybody will be there together learning about the trends and different responses to human trafficking. And then in other times in this 3.5 days, they do breakout sessions, and they take the law enforcement and the prosecutors, and they take them and then take the advocates and take them alone. And so it's really looking at the trends, the things that they can do better, things that they can do to respond to the victims' needs, and ways that law enforcement and prosecution can collaborate their efforts.
What has been your favorite part of this line of work?
I guess it's to see what comes out of the darkness. I've been in this field 20 years. My favorite Bible verse is Genesis 50:20. You intended to harm me, but God meant it for good, for what's being done now, the saving of many lives. And so being in this field long enough to see victims that were kid victims that have grown up, and all of a sudden they're the ones that are starting in law enforcement. They're starting down the path of prosecution, victim specialist. They're growing up to fight the fight that was fought against them. And so I think that when I look around, my favorite part is seeing that even though really horrific things can happen to people, that there's some really good stuff that can come out of it. And that when we focus on what goes right rather than what goes wrong, I think great things can be accomplished.
Holly Strand is the chair of the Western South Dakota Human Trafficking Task Force.